Hi and welcome to QED42's podcast, Design Voice. I am Priyanka Jeff and here we are with the sixth episode with Preston Sill. Preston could be introduced as someone who sits perfectly at the intersection between design and technology. He's a multilingual speaker and can speak about more than 8 languages. He's an editor at A-Listapod, a columnist at CMS Wire, and a contributor to Smashing Magazine. Preston launched and led Acquia Labs Innovation Center and directed voice-driven experiences for clients like State of Georgia and Nestle. Preston wrote the first and the only comprehensive book, which acts as a guide to decoupled Drupal, which was launched in 2018. He has also written Gatsby, the Definitive Guide, which is all set to launch in November 2021. He's currently with Oracle as a product and strategy director. And today, the prime focus of our conversation will be on Preston's recently launched book, which is Voice Content and Usability. Let's get right to it then. Hi, Preston. Welcome to DesignWise. How are you?
Hey, Priyanka. I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for having me here today on DesignWise. It's such a pleasure to speak with you today and talk about some of these amazing things that we've got on the agenda.
Oh, the pleasure is completely ours. So, Preston, the first and the most important thing that I would like to ask you today is about what we just told our audiences of DesignWise, you know, that you've got this perfect balance between design and technology. So how did you get here? What is your story?
That's a great question, Priyanka. And there's a lot of people out there, I think, that can identify with this. Sitting in between the worlds of design and technology is something that I think a lot of us have dealt with, especially those of us who work on the web. I know a lot of people, not only who are part of QED42, but also who listen to DesignWise, are involved in web development and web design. I started out as a web and print designer, which means that I actually began my venture into web design and graphic design through the print medium and through the web medium. I actually combined my interests in computer programming, which I started when I was very young, and my experience into beginning to work on web design. And I've really had the opportunity and the privilege to work on all sorts of different sides of the equation when it comes to web architectures, design architectures, especially on the web. Not only have I had my own independent web design studio, which is no longer in operation, but I do have a new consultancy today that works on voice interface design and things of that nature. But I've also worked for agencies and consultancies, as well as the platform side of content-driven architectures, as well as software products and SaaS products. So my story is very much an interesting journey because, as you can see from the books you just mentioned, Priyanka, I've worked on both books that are in the realm of technology directly, really focusing on things like how people build websites with Drupal or with Gatsby. But Voice Content and Usability, which just came out last week with a book apart, is my first book on design and user experience, and specifically voice interface design, which is an area that I've been wanting to write about for a very long time. And I'm very excited about it, not just because it is the first book on voice content strategy, voice content design. It's also a book apart, my publisher, their first ever book on voice interfaces in general. So it's a very exciting topic. And I think one of the things that's really difficult, obviously, is to maintain that equilibrium between the design and technology worlds. I think we all try our best, however.
So in your book, what is the course of content? Does it even cover pressing issues like privacy? Because, you know, Siri statistics reveal that it is the most used voice assistant among mobile users. Alexa, being a multi-purpose assistant, has millions of users. Then there's Google Home, Microsoft Cortana. And there is also a Microsoft study which talks about 41% of these voice assistant users are concerned about issues like trust, privacy, passive listening. So can design help this concern? Is Alexa actually hearing all our conversations?
That's a very good question, Priyanka. And let me start by using the case study that really underpins and serves as the foundation for my book, Voice Content and Usability, because this really ties into a lot of the privacy issues that many of us have. You know, somebody that I follow online, I had the pleasure of sharing the stage with as well, Sarah M. Watson, has written extensively and done a lot of work on privacy in voice assistants and conversational interfaces that do operate in voice, and how it is that we don't pay as much attention to some of these devices, potentially, as much as we do some of the devices that are more visual or have screens. So Ask Georgia Gov was the very first voice interface for the residents of the state of Georgia here in the United States. And it was part of the state of Georgia's efforts to focus on some of the ways in which other people besides web users who might be using voice interfaces like Amazon Alexa, or who might be elderly or members of disabled communities, want to be able to access content through the Georgia.gov website without necessarily incurring the cognitive burden or some of the barriers that come about when you're using a screen reader or you're using a website, and would rather use a voice interface that you can have a conversation with. Now, one of the big issues, of course, with these voice assistants is, well, you can certainly imagine situations where it's much more helpful, much more catered and personalized to that user's requirements or their needs at that very given moment based on certain traits that you know about the user. For example, knowing their email, their location, their name, certain information that might be personally identifiable information or PII could really be useful to helping these voice interfaces conduct these transactions on behalf of the user or to serve information or deliver information or content that is relevant to that user. However, the privacy concerns are very large. And I think, you know, in addition to the really interesting reporting you mentioned, Priyanka, there's also the issue of the fact that there have been instances of which Amazon Alexa has been heard to actually be recording conversations that it's not supposed to be privy to, that it's not supposed to have access to. And yes, one of the decisions that we made at the very beginning of the Ask Georgia Gov project for the state of Georgia was to say, okay, we're not going to collect any information. It's possible, you know, you certainly could do it. It's feasible. But because of the really big concerns and uncertainty around privacy, the very strong risks that a lot of these voice assistants have when you're potentially handing a lot of this data over to a large corporation and you don't know where it's going, we opted to not collect location, not collect email addresses, not collect any information that's identifiable about that particular resident or user, even though we could potentially help them much more in a personalized fashion if we had. But I think this really comes into question when you think about all of the privacy regulations that are now coming about, not just in Europe and the United States, but also all over the world. We now have GDPR, we now have HIPAA, there's so many new approaches that I think are very important to keep in mind. We've just finished kind of this long process of understanding how privacy really impacts the user experience on a website. Now we're just about to begin the journey of how to understand those things in the context of a voice interface.
So what I understand from this whole thing is that it's up to us. It's up to an ethical business. It's up to a designer or an engineer or a developer to actually decide how much information they would like to record. And, you know, in order to be able to help the users. So it's something that can be done. It's not something that we cannot achieve. So yeah. Right. So the next question is back to basics, and something that our audiences of DesignWise would definitely like to know more from you is, what exactly is voice UX and what is the difference between designing for voice UX and on-screen experiences?
Sure. And you really captured it right there with that last little bit there, Priyanka. So the thing I will say is that voice user experiences and voice user interfaces and voice interface design, in terms of how we think about the universe of user experience today and the world of design today, is a very, very different island. It's really on its own kind of continent over here. And one of the reasons for that is exactly as you mentioned, Priyanka, there's a very big difference between the visual or physical mediums that we work in as designers, like screens and mobile devices and wearable technology and televisions nowadays, And the physical interfaces that we use on a daily basis as well, like computer keyboards and computer mice and video game controllers, all of these things that mediate our human-computer interaction are primarily tactile or visually rooted interfaces. Of course, voice user interfaces are very different because unlike written conversational interfaces like chatbots or textbots or WhatsApp messenger bots, for example, these voice interfaces, especially the ones that are pure voice interfaces, those that do not have any screen or visual component whatsoever, are really unique because as opposed to having something that we can touch or something that we can see or point at or click, instead, it's entirely an interaction that is mediated through the realm of speech, which means that all of the interactions that we have as users have to take place along the dimension of time and not in a dimension of space, as Erica Hall notes in her book, Conversational Design. One of the most important aspects of pure voice interfaces, however, is also the fact well, context. And what that means is you really don't have the capability to give a user a visual rendition of a mental model that is something that's memorable and works for them. For example, I can't give a user a sitemap. I can't give a user a navigation bar. I can't give a user breadcrumb links. I can't give a user even a link itself because there's no way to color text blue and underline it in a voice interface. So voice UX is a very, very thrilling but also very challenging area because we have to really remove ourselves as designers and user experience practitioners from the entirety of the world that we've been operating in over the last 50, 100 years when it comes to these manual and visual interfaces towards more of these kind of human, organic, and conversational approaches that really distinguish voice interfaces from the others that we work with.
So another thing... Another thing that comes to my mind related to the same topic is how do you onboard like a new designer from on-screen to voice UX? How do they upskill themselves?
Absolutely, Priyanka. So what I'll say is for those who are looking into getting into voice interface design, especially those who are already operating in web design and user experience design, I actually just had a question yesterday at a talk I gave from somebody saying, oh, should I do X, Y, Z first? Is there some kind of foundation I need? But the reality today is that unlike 20 years ago or 30 years ago, when designing voice interfaces really required you to have a computational linguistics degree or a very deep understanding of computer science, nowadays there are all sorts of low-code or no-code platforms that are emerging that allow for those who are much more comfortable in tools like Photoshop to be able to use a visual tool that allows you to build a voice interface or a conversational interface. Now, what that means with these what you see is what you get or WYSIWYG tools is that nowadays, no designer needs to learn a technology or learn the particularities of standards like VoiceXML or SSML to really be able to build a chatbot or a voice interface, which really makes this a very compelling new industry for those who are already very well-versed in design or also may not have really gotten into web design. And my book, Voice Content and Usability, actually very much focuses on this later trend that's happening over the past few years for a lot of these conversation design tools to not demand any technical approaches and for them to be more agnostic to some of these approaches, which means that my book doesn't focus on a single technology or a single approach because all of the principles that I talk about for voice interface design, like flow diagrams or dialogue writing or usability testing, apply to all voice interfaces, regardless of what technology platform you're building. So my biggest advice is find the use case, find something that's interesting to upskill your current toolbox with design, and try out some of these tools that are out there like Dialogflow or Bot Society, Oracle Digital Assistant, that might give you the ability to design a voice bot or a chat bot that doesn't necessarily require you to write any code whatsoever.
Right. So this is like an in-between question about the book. I mean, it comes out of the things that you've just told us about the tools and the techniques that designers can practice. So when you were writing this book, I mean, when you thought of this topic that I have to write about this, which was mainly because you worked on this technology for a very long time. So how much time did it take you to write this book? And what was the process you followed for your research?
My process when writing books is very unusual. And I think this is really one of those things that is a little bit tricky, is that I really don't plan out things very far in advance in terms of the actual things I want to talk about, the things I want to write. A lot of it is very stream of consciousness. This is how I write all of my articles and my work. I do have usually some sort of an outline at the beginning, but the book itself really came together through a general sense of what I knew I wanted to talk about in every chapter. You know, basically, okay, chapter one is going to be about voice content. Chapter two is going to be about actually taking that voice content into voice. Chapter three and four are going to be about dialogues and flows, respectively. Chapter five is launching your voice content. And chapter six is about the future or the outlook ahead. And, you know, I think one of the challenges, of course, is that it was during a pandemic and an ongoing pandemic, of course. And I do want to make sure to hold space for everyone at DesignWise's listeners who are still dealing with this ongoing struggle of ours. But the general approach that I took with the book was just to devote as much time as I could outside of my normal workday to really thinking about these ideas and how I wanted to delve into them. But it's really tough, I think, when you're writing a book at the scale of a book of this size, to focus on the narrow perspective that an individual chapter has, as opposed to thinking about the big picture and how you want the entire book to go, because you can very quickly lose the forest for the trees, or vice versa, sometimes when you write a book.
That's what, like, I think there are a lot of people out there who have the talent. They want to write, right? They, you know, something probably stops them. It's probably the fear. So this question was really important for them to hear. So another question is about what are the things that most people don't know about voice design? Something, I mean, you know, the unknown insights that you found out when you were working with voice design technology.
You know, it's really interesting you say that, because I definitely think that there are some interesting insights here with voice interface design that are really interesting to keep in mind. The first is that, you know, I think that a lot of people think that nowadays, especially with all of these platforms emerging, with so many new techniques and so many people getting involved with voice interface design, that it's kind of a mature landscape, that, you know, it's very much as well developed as the web. But nothing could be further from the truth in that regard, because voice interface design is still a very, very, very age field. And I'll share one example of this from the case study that we did in the book. In AskGeorgiaGov for the state of Georgia, one of the biggest issues that we faced was actually not even the fault of the design that we did. And, you know, I think one of the things that a lot of people who are web developers or web designers remember is that back in the early 2000s or mid 2000s, there were a lot of issues with how browsers would use the code that we wrote in order to display certain elements through CSS. And there were a lot of issues with things like Quirks mode compatibility, box model hacks, all sorts of things that a lot of us know from working in the web back in those days. Nowadays, of course, the web is so mature that you don't have to worry about any of those things. We're still in those early stage years when it comes to voice interface design, because one example of this is, you know, we worked very hard on the voice interface itself and the application itself that ultimately ended up being an installable Alexa skill for your Amazon Alexa. And there was one result that kept on popping up in the logs and analytics and reports that we built for the Georgia.gov editorial team. And that was a result that kept on coming up over and over again in these 404 errors. Now, just to give the listeners a sense of what this actually can do is, every single time you interact with the AskGeorgiaGov voice interface, you're really conducting a search across all of the frequently asked questions content that's available on Georgia.gov. So you can ask things like, how do I renew my driver's license? How do I get a fishing license? How do I register to become a nurse? How do I register for a small business loan? How do I register to vote? Obviously, very important topics. Now, one of the results that kept on coming up that returned an error, you know, so basically there were no search results returned, the user wasn't able to find any information or content relevant to this topic, was this particular word, this keyword that kept on coming up in the logs as Lawsons, as in L-A-W-S-O-N apostrophe S. And we had a retrospective about 8 months after the Alexa skill went live and people started using it. And we found that this really strange word kept on coming up. Why is somebody trying to search for this thing that has absolutely no relationship to anything that is in the state government of Georgia? We thought about it for a long time. And then suddenly one of the native people from Georgia in the room who's lived in Georgia all her life, she kind of perked up and she said, oh, you know what? I think that might be somebody who's trying to say license, like driver's license, but it's in a very Southern or Georgian dialect or accent. And you know, this is not actually the fault of the application, right? Because we did usability studies. We did all sorts of research to make sure that it would go well as soon as we launched it. But this is actually an example of where Alexa fell apart or where Amazon fell apart, because the underlying understanding, the natural language understanding mechanism that Alexa was using was not developed enough yet to be able to hear American accents that are not the same as the American accents that it was trained on. And if you think about all of the different dialects that people have in English all over the world, you can see how this can become a very big problem very quickly. Now, the other big thing that I will say that didn't really come as a surprise to me, but I think will come as a surprise to a lot of the people in the audience of DesignWise and for this book, is that I think one of the things that we often forget about the world of accessibility for voice user interfaces is that voice user interfaces are really intended to accelerate interactions with content or with tasks and transactions that you need to perform. But on the web, one of the big problems and disadvantages of the screen reader, which we use all the time to do this sort of work, is that it is fundamentally a visually rooted tool, which means that screen readers rely on the visual structures of websites in order for people who are using screen readers or disabled people to be able to actually interact with the web user, you know, the UI elements or the text that's on a page. And so there's a voice interface designer named Chris Mari who has written extensively about this and says, you know, I never really understood why it was that people built screen readers this way, where it relies on the approach of the web designer in order for content to be delivered in a way that makes sense to the screen reader user. It should be the other way around. There should be a voice interface that allows for a much more efficient interaction. And being a blind person himself, he has a very good, you know, good amount of insight into why it is that people should really think about the fact that, well, screen readers are kind of the normal or the default way that many of us think about web accessibility, but it's actually still not that optimal or ideal experience for those who really want to be able to have an interaction with a voice interface as disabled users needing to access that content. So I think those two insights were both very interesting to me from the standpoint of, well, you know, voice interfaces are not so ready for prime time as we think. They're not quite ready to beat us at our own game of conversation. At the same time, there's also areas where voice interfaces can far outperform some of the things that we already have that are meant for accessibility solutions for disabled communities. So I think both of those insights might come as a bit of a surprise to some of the folks who are going to read my book and also listen to DesignWise.
Yes, most certainly. And these are some great examples and brilliant insights coming straight from someone who's an expert in voice interface technology and design. So the next question is around voice interface ethics and how design and technology together can address the need for ethics in voice UX. And like, how do we create universally likable voice assistants?
I think it's very interesting to use the phrase universally likable, right? Because, you know, that's a very, very good way to put it. You know, I also like the way that the author of a conversational interface book, Randy Harris, likes to refer to what's called habitability, or being able to, you know, essentially live in a voice interface for a long period of time without getting frustrated or having a tough time. I think one of the big issues, though, around this notion of, let's say, universality for voice interfaces is that the big question that we have to often answer is, well, what does that mean in the context of users that are very different from each other? Because unlike the web and unlike physical interfaces that many of us use on a daily basis, voice interfaces really are mandatorily or obligatorily a person for all intents and purposes. We hear them, we picture a person in our minds, we're talking to somebody that sounds like a human being and, you know, for all intents and purposes could be a human being when it comes to those voice interactions that we have. But of course, this presents some really interesting questions and some issues, I think, that we as designers, especially from the standpoint of ethics, as you mentioned, Priyanka, have to think about. Because ethically speaking, who is that person that you're picturing in your mind when you hear somebody like Alexa or Siri or Cortana speak? And I think this is particularly relevant for those who either speak English as a second language or also have interactions that involve interfaces using a dialect that is not American English or not British English. One of the things that I think is very, very tough about this notion of universal likability is that, you know, a voice assistant that is really likable for one person might not be so likable for another person. And that has to do with things like how that personification happens of that voice assistant. And finding that neutral middle ground is very difficult. So my biggest advice always is for those, and I know that we're going to get into some of this more in the near future here, but I think one of the things that's really important for voice interface designers, especially those who are new to the industry, to think about is, over the last 6 years, as I've been building voice interfaces, one of the biggest things I've learned is that you really cannot be thinking about universal likability from the perspective of the world. And I think this is absolutely true of the way that you were talking about this, Priyanka, which is that when it comes to universal likability, you really need to be focusing on that intimate sense of who the user is. Who is the user that you're trying to serve? What is the demographic of the user that you're trying to serve? Because, you know, to use an example that might be familiar to some of the DesignWise audience, you know, if you're building a voice interface for Zomato.com, for example, you're not really going to necessarily want to extend your reach beyond the core user base of that website and those applications. If you're building something that is not catering to your users directly, you might as well throw away the notion of universal. In voice interfaces especially, it becomes such a subjective and challenging optimal ideal to reach.
Okay. That's really interesting. There's another very controversial thing that I heard about, which is called, that some studies have shown that female voices are perceived to be warmer and less threatening. That's why if you notice, like most voices in Voice UX or, you know, devices, Echo Dot and other devices, Siri, I mean, most of them are female. So what are the reasons behind it? Why are we doing that in Voice UX design?
Yeah, and I think this really gets at some of the themes that you and I both talked about earlier around universal likability. And one of the things that I think is really important to keep in mind is that we live in a world with many legacies and many historical injustices and different axes of oppression that have created these technical systems that now facilitate a lot of the interactions that we have, but also pose a lot of really tough challenges. And one of those, of course, is, you know, when you think about the fact that by and large, it was really cisgender, heterosexual, white men who built a lot of these voice interfaces to begin with, of course, they're going to project a lot of their preconceived notions about who a voice assistant should be on them. And if you think about Alexa, Siri, Cortana, a lot of these devices, you think about who the person is that you're drawing in your mind as you talk to this person, and you're generally thinking about a white woman who is potentially an executive assistant or in a secretarial role, which is a very, very sexist way to think about a lot of these voice assistants, and really is very, very striking given the fact that these voice assistants couldn't care any less about what it is that they're being personified as. And yet we do project a lot of these biases in society onto them. And this is not just about, I think, the axes of misogyny that you see within the voice interface world, where, you know, why is it, for example, that a lot of examples of people using voice interfaces that are on YouTube or on Twitter also show a very rude or very impolite approach or disrespectful approach to treating these voice interfaces that might give carte blanche to somebody to think that they can do that in real life as well with somebody yes. who's actually human.
Absolutely.
And I think that's a very important thing to think about. The second thing, though, is, you know, really going into some of the racial dynamics as well. And one of the, you know, interesting things about the ways in which voice interfaces have operated lately, especially, is let's take a big step back from voice interface design for a second, because I think that's very important for us as designers and user experience practitioners. We have to look at what the context is all the time in which we're building and designing these interfaces. Now, by and large, a lot of these organizations and large companies that are moving towards voice interfaces, moving towards Alexa, moving towards Siri, are looking at these voice assistants because they want to somehow reduce their amounts of people who are working in call centers or who are working in customer service roles. But when you think about it, who are the people who are being the most impacted by those customer service layoffs or customer service reductions in staffing? It's primarily people who are in call centers in, for example, in the Philippines or in Malaysia or in Bangladesh or in India or Pakistan. And when you think about the fact that so many of these voices, so much of this richness of talking to somebody who is, for example, located, you know, in Manila or located in Kuala Lumpur and not somebody who's located in, let's say, the plastic of a voice interface, you really begin to wonder the really far-reaching impact of the fact that a lot of these people who will lose their jobs, of course, and no longer have incomes to support their families, will also be replaced and outmoded by these voice interfaces that bear absolutely no relation to these real people that we have. So one of the things I'm most worried about when it comes to equity and ethics in voice interface design is, what is the impact of focusing too much on this monoculture of voice interfaces where all we hear is the same sets of voices over and over again, but we no longer hear the different dialects and the different communities and the different people and the different genders and the different sexualities and the different really lived experiences that we should be hearing all over the place in voice interfaces to reflect the ways in which our world works? And this is one of those things that I think we as designers have to be very, very careful about and think about when it comes to how we implement voice interfaces.
Why did you choose, you know, voice content to write an entire book? And what is the favorite part of the book that you've written there?
Yeah, I wrote this book primarily because I really wanted to share with the world what we worked on for Ask Georgia Gov. I think that voice content is something that's coming around just around the corner. As you can see from the case study with the state of Georgia, a lot of people, a lot of organizations are already very, very interested in the topic of voice content. And I think it's one of those examples of a realm of user interfaces that we really haven't talked about very much yet, because the overwhelming majority today of voice interfaces primarily is transactional. They conduct tasks on your behalf. They'll reserve a hotel room for you. They'll check your bank balance for you. But they're not really necessarily rooted in some of these use cases that are focused around content acquisition or information delivery. And that's one of the big reasons I wanted to write this book, is that I saw a big need, a big gap in the market and big gap in the literature for a discussion of voice interfaces that has a focus on content strategy, content design, all these things, copywriting, that are very, very important today to a lot of brands around the world. Of course, also, I wanted to scratch my own itch and share a little bit about Ask Georgia Gov, the project that we worked on. My favorite part of the book, though, to be quite honest, is probably the very last chapter, which deals with a lot of the themes that you and I have spoken about just today in the context of inclusion and equity and how we can really help address some of just biases that we have in the voice interface world. So definitely would encourage everyone who wants to check out the book to look at chapter 6 for some of my thoughts on some of these matters that we've discussed today.
Preston, this conversation is a gift, and I'm sure that the audience of DesignWise will love the brilliant insights. And also, I can't wait to get my hands in the book to learn more about voice content and usability. So are there any events which are coming up where people can get their book signed by you, or where they can find you online and talk to you more about voice content and usability?
Sure. Well, absolutely. We'll be very happy to sign any books as soon as things reopen here. But you can definitely get the book right now. It's available. It was launched on June 22nd at abookapart.com. There's also a preview of the book with a lot of information about what you can learn from the book on my website, preston.so. But my website, preston.so, also contains a massive amount of information about how voice interfaces and content architectures intersect. So if you're looking at some information about content strategy for voice interfaces, how to build voice interfaces, how to think about voice interfaces, and usability studies for voice interfaces, you can find all of that information at preston.so, my website. But There's also a lot of writing that I've done for a list apart about voice interfaces and CMS Wire as well. And I also do a lot of work around the web for other publications as well. As always, you can also reach me at Twitter on my handle at Preston So, also on LinkedIn, as well as on my email address, preston.so@oracle.com. And once again, if you want to order the book, go ahead and check out abookapart.com or my website, preston.so.
Thank you so much, Preston. And this thank you comes from the entire team of QED42. Thank you so much for joining us in DesignWise.
Thank you so much for having me today, Priyanka. And it's been a pleasure to be on the DesignWise podcast. Thanks so much.
So that was Preston So on DesignWise episode 6. And do make sure to check out his book. It's called Voice Content and Usability. And this episode is very, very special because it calls for a wrap of an entire season of 6 great podcasts with 6 great guests. Listen to us on Spotify and Apple Podcast. Thank you so much for listening to us. This is Priyanka Jeff on DesignWise from QED42.